Good morning, everyone. This morning I'd like to talk about singing our prayers with focused presence. Now, recently, and actually in the last year or two, we've heard a number of times from the masters in discourses and dictations that they're suggesting that we sing our prayers more and that we even consider having entire services in which we sing all the prayers. And this is a little bit of a change because many of us come from a place where most of our prayers were of the decreed nature. And we've all spent a lot of time and effort developing our abilities and our habits and our momentums along the lines of decrees. And of course, we've been singing also. But I think in some respects, the singing part of invocation in general, and the specific strengths that can come from that probably aren't as well developed in our community as they could be. And I think that from the perspective of the masters and as well as us, we'd always like to have the greatest bang for our buck, wouldn't we? We'd like to come here and we show up at these services in order to make a difference, to try to bless the earth and to pour forth the greatest amount of blessing to free mankind. And we'd like to do it with the least amount of time and effort and get the greatest effect, right? We all consider ourselves to be initiates on the ladder of initiation, and we're always developing talents within ourselves, which lead ultimately to the cities. And one of those, I think, very important ones is the service, the initiation, and the skill of invocation, specifically through prayers and singing. Okay, we've heard of the priesthood of Melchizedek, and I believe the singing part of the priesthood of Melchizedek is something that we're being asked to develop. Now, the ideal society has focused on that, and it's very interesting because their services sound and they look a lot different. However, I'm sure that we would all agree that the ends are meant to be the same, to bless life, to magnify the Lord. So I think one of the reasons why the masters would like us to move forward with singing more of our decrees, because we've heard before that when we sing, music elicits probably more emotion in most of us and devotion, more of an emotional outpouring than simply recitation of words, which ends up magnifying and intensifying the arrow of our offering. So we know that our prayers, when we give them, they're like, well, they can have many forms, but one way to look at it is that they have a certain magnitude and clarity to them, the specificity and the clarity of the architecture of it, and then the oomph behind it. Right? So if we can boost the oomph behind it, it reaches the Godhead to be received and then magnified and then sent back to the earth as a blessing even more effectively. And that's the idea, is we'd like to have very, very clear intents and then a lot of oomph behind our prayers and our songs. And the emotions elicited during singing really help that a lot. Now, how can we as individuals work on that? Well, I know for my own self, I remind myself when it comes time, when it's decree leader announces a song, I remind myself that I'm working on this and that I attempt to tie into that master that we're singing to, or that virtue or that part of God through my devotion. I literally try to do that consciously, not try, but I do it. And anybody can do that if you just remind yourself of this, that you're working on this instead of just simply singing, you might say. Because we can actually, la, 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 we can sing. And a certain amount of good comes, of course, because the masters see our good intentions. However, as initiates, we're working on amplifying and magnifying that and becoming adepts, right? So what we can do is remind ourselves that when it comes time to us to sing a song, we're going to really pour our emotions into it. And we're not just that, we're going to pour an intense concentration on connecting with that master and feeling as though we've connected with that master over a sort of a conduit. So that's how it seems to me. That's how it feels to me. Okay? In addition to that, I think that there's the element of focused attention, which intensifies and it clarifies that stream. Okay, so the clarity, what that is more like the mental part of it, which is what is specifically the intention behind your prayer. Okay, we could be praying about many, many, many different things. And of course, there's the clarity of the color of the ray that's coming through. There's the clarity of the thought form shapes. There's many, many dimensions in the higher realms of what we would call clarity, as opposed to what I was just talking about, which is the oomph, the power of it, and the frequency of it, and so forth. So the clarity of thought, as well as the focused attention and devotion, are the two elements that probably could be boiled down to the things that we're working on here. When we really put focused attention on either a decree or a song, I think one way that can manifest is that we're really paying attention to the words in the song. Or if we're not necessarily just focusing on those words, another way this can happen, and this happens to me a lot, is I create a story, you might say. And it's not just this rambling story, but it's a story of this beautiful blessing that's happening as a result of this prayer or this song that I'm singing. And it unreels, and it's seeing the masters do this and go to these people and do such and such. And then it gets bigger and bigger. And, you know, when we do that, it creates a thought form, which is that clarity when we have a sort of a story behind. And sometimes you can really clarify that with the invocation you give before a song or a decree. But then if you continue to work on that during the song, instead of just la-la-la-la-la singing it, okay, the thought form builds in intensity. The thought form builds in clarity over time as you keep focusing on it. So those are some things that I work on, and I thought I'd just offer them as possibilities that you can consider. Another thing I'd like to mention is, and I've noticed this in myself, and I can see it, that it's something that we all share, is there is a tendency in our services, I believe, that we'll be going along and we'll be giving a rosary or a decree. And many people I've talked to really like decrees. They have a great momentum at decreeing. And then we punctuate our decree services with songs. And what happens is there's this sort of a letdown during a song, and it's kind of a break time, you might say. Time to take a break, even a potty break. But that's obviously, we need potty breaks sometimes. I'm not saying don't do that. I'm saying it's a sort of a break in the intention to be engaged in this spiritual work. And it's taking a mental break, and it's taking a focus break. Now, obviously, we're all free to do as we will, and I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but I'm suggesting that we have an opportunity here during those punctuations in our services where we sing to actually create that singing part to be like the icing on the cake as the highest part of our service. It's the focal point where the greatest amount of intense energy flows, and that's the opposite of, oh, there's a song coming, I'm going to go, you know, stir the soup, or, you know, I'm going to relax, I'm going to get up and stretch and do things. It's fine to do those, but instead, realize the possibility that, and work on the possibility that the song part could be the highlight. That could be the most intense connection you have. It's possible. Many people I've talked to with regard to decrees tell me that, you know, they get into a sweet spot during decreeing as a result of what I would call the meditative state that can come from saying a particular decree that they know very well over and over and over and over. And they say that they feel like they move into a sweet spot where they really feel the energy flowing. And it's because that power of focused attention, focused presence starts to kick in to a great degree as a result of the repetitiveness and the time that's spent in that decree. And the game here, I think, is to learn to do that very quickly so that we feel, we have the biofeedback of that flow of energy and the intensity happening and the connection with the master, even at the very beginning of a song and all through a song that it builds and so forth. So this is what I'm advocating here. What we give forth is magnified. And the more clear we are in the architecture of what we offer, and the more vivid and intense the emotion and the devotion we pour out, the greater the result. That's basically what it comes down to. And the less time it takes to create stupendous results. So we're after stupendous results. We're here to save the earth and save as many people as possible from many more incarnations that are necessary. So I'd like to offer read something to you, which is a passage from a theosophy book that was, it's called Man, Whence, How, and Whither. It's by Charles Ledbetter. And if you are enamored with what I'm about to share here and you'd like to go read this part, because it really, really stirred me up, this is the very end of the book. And this passage is the result of Charles Ledbetter, who did a lot of clairvoyant research into the past. He along with Annie Besant, chronicled a lot of the past through many of the writings that they had. And it was interesting, this last part of this book, he writes, and one day I was about to go into one of these deep states and start, you know, looking at the past and chronicling what's happening. And the master that was with me and working with me suggested I turn the dial the other way. And he goes, oh, that's interesting. I had no idea that I could turn it the other way. And he did it, and he began to see the future. And this master showed him a future 600 years approximately from now. And he spent a whole chapter looking at a spiritual community based in an area that is approximately where California is right now. And it is overseen by Moria and Kuthumi, he says. And there are many, many, many interesting parts to what we see in there. But I'd like to read to you his explanation of what happens in their spiritual services, because it illustrates a lot of what I'm talking about here, and in a way that's just very, very, very inspiring. So I'm going to describe the work of the devas and the masters in one of the temples. They have many temples for the different color rays, okay? And this color ray is the pink ruby, he calls it crimson color ray, and how it works. And the essentially what I'm talking about, this developing of focused attention and focused presence during our spiritual work, is something that these people are very, very engaged in. So I'm going to read this, and I hope you enjoy this. One prominent feature of the religious life is the extent to which the devas take part in it. Many religions of the 20th century spoke of a golden age in the past in which angels or deities walked freely among men, but this happy state of things had then ceased because of the grossness of that stage of evolution. As regards our community, this one in the future, this has again been realized, for great devas habitually come among the people and bring to them many new possibilities of development, each drawing to himself those cognate to his own nature. This should not surprise us, for even in the 20th century, much help was given by devas to those who were able to receive it. Such opportunities of learning, such avenues of advancement, were not then open to the majority, But this was not because of the unwillingness of the devas, but because of man's backwardness in evolution. We were then much in the position of children in a primary class in this world school. The great professors from the universities sometimes came to our schools to instruct the advanced students, and we sometimes saw them pass at a distance, but their ministrations were as yet of no direct use to us simply because we were not at an age or state of development at which we could make any use of them. The classes were being held, the teachers were there, quite at our disposal as soon as we grew old enough. Our community in this future one has grown old enough, and therefore it is reaping the benefit of constant intercourse with these great beings and of frequent instructions from them. These devas are not merely making sporadic appearances, but are definitely working as part of the regular organization under the direction of the chief priest. And the chief priest, I think, in this case was Kuthumi, who takes entire control of the religious development of the community and of its educational department. For the outward expression of this religion, we find that various classes of temple services are provided, and that the management of these is the special function of the devas. Four types of these temples were observed, and though the outline and objects of the services were the same in all, there were striking differences in the form and method which we shall now endeavor to describe. The keynote of the temple service is that each person, belonging as he does to a particular type, has some one avenue through which he can most easily reach the divine, and therefore be most easily reached in turn by the divine influence. In some men that channel is affection, in others devotion, in others sympathy, in yet others the intellect. For these four kinds of temples exist, and each of them the object is to bring the prominent quality of the man into active and conscious relationship with the corresponding quality in the logos, of which it is a manifestation, for in that way the man himself can most easily be uplifted and helped. Therefore, we can be raised for a time to a level of spirituality and power far beyond anything that is normally possible for him, and every such effort of spiritual elevation makes the next similar effort easier for him, and also raises slightly his normal level, permanent progress. Every service which a man attends is intended to have a definite and calculated effect upon him or her, and the services for a year or a series of years are carefully ordered with a view to the average development of the congregation and with the idea of carrying its members upward to a certain point. It is in this work that the cooperation of the deva is so valuable, since he acts as a true priest and intermediary between the people and the logos, receiving, gathering together, and forwarding their streams of aspirational force, and distributing, applying, and bringing down to the level of the floods of divine influence which comes as a response from on high. So we're going to talk. This is Boyd speaking. We're going to see that there's a lot of things, ideas in here that we see are a part of our prayer services, and they don't always have the same words and so forth, but you see that the masters are developing this in our community now. The Crimson Temple. The first temple entered for the purpose of examination was one of those which the deva originally showed in his pictures, one of those where progress is principally made through affection. A great characteristic of the services of which is the splendid flood of color which accompanies them, and is in fact their principal expression. Imagine a magnificent circular building somewhat resembling a cathedral, yet of no order of architecture at present known to us, and much more open in the outer air than it is possible for any cathedral to be in ordinary European climates. Imagine it filled with a reverent congregation, and the deva priests standing in the center before them, on the apex of a kind of pyramidal or conical erection of filigree work, so that he is equally visible from every part of the great building. It is noteworthy that every worshipper, as he enters, takes his seat on quietly and reverently, and then closes his or her eyes and passes before their mental vision a succession of sheets or clouds of color, such as sometimes pass before one's eyes in the darkness just before falling asleep. Each person has an order of his own for these colors, and they are evidently, to some extent, a personal expression of him or her. This seems to be of the nature of the preliminary prayer on entering a church of the 20th century, and it is intended to calm the person, to collect his thoughts if they have been wandering, and to attune him to the surrounding atmosphere and the purpose which it subserves. When the service commences, the deva materializes on the apex of his pyramid, assuming for the occasion a magnificent and glorified human form, and wearing in these particular temples flowing vestments of rich crimson. The color varies with the type of temple, as will presently be seen. His first action is to cause a flashing out above his head a band of brilliant colors somewhat resembling a solar spectrum, save that on different occasions the colors are in different order and vary in their proportions. It is practically impossible to describe this band of colors with accuracy, for it is much more than a mere spectrum. It is a picture, yet not a picture. It has within it geometric forms, yet we have at present no means by which it can be drawn or represented, for it is in more dimensions than are known to our senses, as they have now constituted. This band is the keynote or text of that particular service, indicating to those who understand it the exact object which it is intended to attain and the direction in which their affection and aspiration and service must be outpoured. It is a thought expressed in the color language of the devas and is intelligible as such to all the congregation. It is materially visible on the physical plane as well as on the astral and the mental plane, for although the majority of the congregation are likely to possess at least some astral sight, there may still be some for whom such sight is only occasional. Each person present now attempts to imitate this text or keynote, forming by the power of his will in the air in front of him a smaller band of colors as nearly like it as he can. Some succeed far better than others, so that each such attempt expresses not only the subject indicated by the deva, but also the characteristic of the man who makes it. Some are able to make this so definite that it is visible on the physical plane, while others can make it only on astral or mental levels. Some of those who produce the most brilliant and successful imitations of the form made by the deva do not bring them down to the physical plane. The deva, holding out his arms over the people, now pours out through this color form a wonderful stream of influence upon them, a stream which reaches them through their own corresponding color forms. So this is like the creation of a conduit, you might say, that they're doing, and uplifts them precisely in the proportion in which they have been successful in making their color forms resemble that of the deva. So effort matters, development matters in this case. The influence is not that of the deva priest alone, for above and altogether beyond him and apart from the temple or the material world stands a ring of higher devas, for whose forces he acts as a channel. The astral effect of the outpouring is remarkable. A sea of pale pink, ruby, crimson light suffuses the vast aura of the deva and spreads out in great waves over the congregation, thus acting upon them and stirring their emotions into greater activity. Each of them shoots up into the rose-colored sea his own particular form. But beautiful thought though that is, it is naturally of a lower order than that of the deva, individually coarser and less brilliant than the totality of brilliancy in which it flashes forth. So we have a curious and beautiful effect of deep crimson flames piercing a rose-colored sea, as one might imagine volcanic flames shooting up in the front of a gorgeous sunset. So for me, this is what I see as similar, analogous here to our prayers going up, our offering. And so to understand to some extent how this activity of sympathetic vibration is brought about, we must realize that the aura of a deva is far more extensive than that of a human being, and it is also far more flexible. The feeling which in an ordinary man expresses itself in a smile of greeting, in a deva causes a sudden expansion and brightening of the aura and manifests not only in color but also in musical sound. A greeting from one deva to another is a splendid chord of music, or rather an arpeggio. A conversation between two devas is like a fugue. An oration delivered by one of them is a splendid oratorio. A Rupa Deva of ordinary development has frequently an aura of many hundreds of yards in diameter, and when anything interests him or excites his enthusiasm, it instantly increases enormously. Our Deva priest, therefore, is including the whole of his congregation within his aura, and is consequently able to act upon them in a most intimate manner, from within as well as from without. And see, I think this is exactly what the masters do during our dictations. Exactly. This first outpouring of influence upon the people has the effect of bringing each person up to his highest level and evoking from within the noblest affection of which he is capable. When the Deva sees that all are tuned to the proper key, he reverses the current of his force. He concentrates and defines his aura into a smaller spherical form, and out of the top of which rises a huge column reaching upward. Instead of extending his arms over the people, he raises them above his head, and at that signal, every man in the congregation sends forth towards the Deva priest the utmost wealth of his affection and aspirations, pours himself out in worship and love at the feet of the deity. The Deva draws all these fiery streams from the people into himself and pours them upward in one vast fountain of many colored flame, which expands as it rises, and it is caught by the circle of waiting Devas, who pass it through themselves, and transmuting it, converge it like rays refracting through a lens until it reaches the great chief Deva of their ray, the mighty potentate who looks upon the very Logos himself and represents that ray in relation to him. The great chieftain is collecting many streams from all parts of his world, and he weaves these many streams into one great rope, which binds the earth to the feet of its god. He combines these many streams into the one great river, which flows around those feet and brings our petal of the lotus closer to the heart of the flower. And he answers, this is the divinity, the Logos, and he answers. In the light of the Logos himself shines forth for a moment a yet greater brilliancy. Back to the great chief, Deva chieftain flashes that instant recognition. Through him on the waiting ring below flows down that flood of power, and as through them it touches the Deva priest, expectant on his pinnacle, once more he lowers his arms and spreads them out above his people in benediction. A flood of colors, gorgeous beyond all description, fills the whole vast cathedral. Torrents, as of liquid fire, yet delicate as the hues of an Egyptian sunset, are bathing everyone in their effulgence. And out of all this glory, each one takes to himself that which he is able to take, that which the stage of his development enables him to assimilate. All the vehicles of each man present are vivified into their highest activity by this stupendous downrush of divine power, and for the moment each realizes his fullest capacity, what the life of God really means, and how in each it must express itself as love for his fellow men. This is a far fuller and more personal benediction than that poured out at the beginning of the service, for here is something exactly fitted to each man, strengthening him in his weakness, and yet at the same time developing to its highest possibility all that is best in him, giving him not only a tremendous and transcendent experience at the time, but also a memory which shall be for him as a radiant and glowing light for many days to come. This is the daily service, the daily religious practice of those who belong to the ray of affection. Nor does the good influence of this service affect only those who are present. Its radiations extend over a large district and purify the astral and mental atmospheres. The effect is distinctly perceptible to any moderately sensitive person, even for many miles away from the temple. Each such service also sends out a huge eruption of rose-colored thought forms, which bombard the surrounding country with thoughts of love, so that the whole atmosphere is full of it. In the temple itself, A vast crimson vortex is set up, which is largely permanent, so that anyone entering the temple immediately feels its influence, and this also keeps up a steady radiation upon the surrounding district. In addition to this, each man, as he goes home from the service, is himself a center of force of no mean order, and when he reaches his home, the radiation which pours from him are strongly perceptible to any neighbors and family members who have not been able to attend the service. So he goes on and explains that sometimes after that part, the deva would give a sermon, and maybe in words or just in thought forms and so forth. But I think you can see that there's so many analogs that we can recognize here. And it's interesting because at the time that Ledbetter wrote this, I don't think they had the same, they didn't have, I really don't think they had the same kind of prayer services and decree services like we do. And so it's interesting. We recognize this, but this was all very novel for them at the time. But isn't this a wonderful explanation and illustration of what's possible and what really is happening on the inner during our prayer services? And more to the point, I wanted to read this and share this with you because I think it illustrates how important it is for us to continually work on ourselves and our ability to engage in this practice. We all want to do our best, and we all want to bless life. That's what we're here for. And so, anyway, this is the great opportunity. Before I close here, I'd like to just mention one other part of this aspect here. And this is a special service that can be done especially by broadcast leaders and prayer leaders. Okay, this is for leaders. Excuse me. And that is, when we sing our songs, there's a number of ways as we conduct these services that we can actually conduct them from section to section. And I often hear something like this. Now I'm going to play song number 11. Or let's sing our song number 11 to Archangel Michael, or something like that. Okay, and so that's fine. I don't mean to be critical of anybody, really. But, you know, we can, as leaders, probably work on a little bit more our opportunity at that point to inspire and to help focus the people we're in this prayer service with. Help them focus the clarity of the what it is we're working on, as well as help them with the inspired part, the emotional part. Okay, and so I'd like to illustrate this a little bit. Like I said, it's possible to say, now I'm going to play song number 11 to Archangel Michael. Or I could say, now let's begin to work with Archangel Michael to free life around the world with our song number 11. So please turn to that. Beloved Archangel Michael, we are gathering with you right now, and we see you flying around the world right now with millions and millions of blue angels, and going to the side of each one and flashing forth that blue flame sword and cutting free each one of those self-limiting habit patterns and all the moroseness and the weight of the day. And we see you leaving each one now with a feeling of hope and inspiration, and with the feeling of that the possibility of today being a great day. God bless them. Beloved Archangel Michael, help each one be their very best today. And then you start playing the song. Now, see how that kind of a little interlude, it harnesses some of these concepts I'm bringing up, which is it introduces some specificity to the introduction of it. It gives a little invocation. And I made an attempt, and I just made that up. I didn't write this down. I didn't really rehearse it or anything. But to me, telling a little story like that, it introduces specificity, and it gives us an opportunity to introduce some emotion and to introduce the power of our intent to bless life. See, I feel a great native desire in my soul that every life should be free. And I know that each one of you does, or else you wouldn't show up in this service in the morning, right? So let's harness that power. Let's keep focusing that power, and let's keep our clarity and this emotion and devotion at an apex as much as possible, and as well as have fun in our services. So thanks so much for joining us this morning, and thanks for listening to this, and I hope this has been helpful. So back to you, Ron and Dwayne. Thank you.